Hello, and welcome to Tennis Stories. I'm your host, Anisha Boston Hill, head of NJTL Strategic Partnerships and Events at USTA Eastern. So everyone has a tennis story. And on this podcast, we're interviewing some of the most interesting folks to hear what it's about this sport that takes them from enjoying it as a hobby to an all-out obsession. My guest today is Roxanne Aaron, president of the oldest African-American sports organization in the United States, the American Tennis Association. In her role, she works to make tennis more diverse and inclusive, and she presides over the association's century-old national championship. Roxanne, thank you so much for sitting down with us.
Thank you for having me.
We're so excited to hear more about your role. Let's start with your personal tennis history. You seem to be more than just a tennis mom and a tennis player. Would you agree?
Oh, yes, I would agree, but I would say more like a tennis mom than a tennis player. I learned how to play tennis at one of the most exciting HBCUs, Historic Black College, in Greensboro, North Carolina, Bennett College, which is an all-girls college. So that was my introduction to tennis.
Wow, wow. And that takes you back some time. And how did you feel about being on the tennis court, you know, at Bennett College in this, you know, what we didn't realize what, you know, would be a legendary historically Black university and college and university during this time?
Well, when I went to college back in the mid-70s, tennis was one of the sports. The college was taught you how to be well-rounded. So I had to learn how to play tennis. I had to learn how to play hockey. I had to learn how to play basketball. And I had to learn how to swim. That was all part of the gym class. So it became a well-rounded sports became a well-rounded thing, and I really love tennis, although I am not good at it.
Well, that's nice to admit. So how did you go from being a tennis player to a tennis mom, and did you play in any, like, tournaments? I'm sure you were just fantastic.
Well, I didn't play in any tennis. I just, in the tournaments, I played for fun.
Okay.
And I have to be honest that when I got out of college and moved into my first apartment, ended up being an apartment with a tennis community. Oh, beautiful. Wow. Tennis courts in Connecticut. Beautiful tennis courts. I mean, and I started out just going to the tennis courts just to meet guys. I admit it. With my tennis racket. So that's how I really started off playing tennis.
Doesn't matter how you get there, as long as you get to the court, right?
That's right. That's right.
And so you went on from being a leisure player to having children, three children, and your sons really excelled in tennis. So
that's right.
What got them involved? Like, did you just say, okay, I have sons and I just want them to play, or just was it, you know, well, how are you going to get your sons involved competitively?
Well, my oldest son, how I got him involved, my oldest son was a baseball player.
Okay.
And he loved baseball. So he had a terrible experience where a fly ball, he was out in the outfield, and a fly ball hit him in the eye.
Oh, no.
And I had to rush him to the emergency room. My husband and I had to rush him to the emergency room. And after that, he didn't want to play baseball anymore. Now, he was not the height for basketball, and he didn't have the tenacity for football. So okay. I said to him, I said, you know what? I think you should play tennis. So he was almost 12 years old. So I found a tennis coach, and he started playing tennis. He turned out to be a good tennis player. So I became a tennis mom and travel on the weekends to take them to USTA tournaments and ATA tournaments.
Wow. Wow. And did you ever in your wildest dreams think that one day you would be leading the ATA?
Oh, no. Oh, no. Because what happened is that in Connecticut, the ATA had a section which is called the New England Tennis Association. And the tennis coach belonged to the section, belonged to the ATA section. And he started encouraging some of the parents to go to the meetings. And I started going to the meetings and I got involved with the New England Tennis Association. And at the time, my son was really moving up. When he went to high school, he was the first African-American to play tennis on the high school team.
Wow.
And he turned out to be such an excellent tennis player that he ended up getting a scholarship in college for tennis.
Now that, I mean, I think that's every parent tennis mom's dream,
right? Right.
And so what would you see as the most important job as a tennis mom, tennis parent out there? What advice would you give those people that are watching or listening?
Well, one of the advice I'll give those people is that you have to let your child play the game that he or she should play. You know, sometimes we as parents, we get too carried away. And not every tennis player is going to be that champion that's going to play the U.S. Open or Wimbledon.
No, Roxanne, stop it. Don't break their dreams.
No. Not every. But we gotta understand that player has to go to what door works for them, because there's so many opportunities in tennis. You can be a tennis coach. Is there so many opportunities to be to work for the USTA in some capacity? And kids need to have that understanding. And parents, sometimes we as parents in every sport put too much pressure on our child, and not to let them enjoy. Just let them go enjoy playing tennis and go through that door that works for them.
No, I can totally relate. And so you mentioned, you know, New England Tennis Association, which is one of the sections of the ATA earlier. What was it about your experience as a mom of a competitive tennis player that made you really want to get more involved? There's one thing about being a tennis mom, but being involved and really helping lead the process for any sport, specifically tennis, really just speaks volumes to your dedication. So what was it really about?
Well, what it was that I got a chance to see that there were some kids, some junior players that did not have an opportunity to play tennis because they didn't have anyone to expose them to the sport. Mm. And not everyone is going to be the next Michael Jordan, you know, play basketball, football. And sometimes we gear our kids toward those kind of sports, and instead of introducing them to tennis, because tennis is a lifelong sport. Mm-hmm. My older son says that he can take a racket and get on a plane and go somewhere to Miami or California, take his racket and go out to tennis court and play tennis.
Okay.
And so that's what got me involved, because I want to see more girls and boys, black and brown juniors, to learn this sport of tennis.
Wow. And so you've been working in the industry for many years now. What significant changes have you seen during your time?
Well, I have seen tennis grow. And I really have seen it grow among black and brown kids. And that's what I see the numbers. I see the numbers that, even though the numbers are not what we might want, but I see the numbers growing. And I see the partnership now of the USTA to bring in more, casting that net to bring more people under that umbrella. And that's what I think is so exciting.
Yeah, it's so interesting, because this past weekend, Francis Tiafo mentioned that, you know, he wants more cheering in tennis, similar to kind of like basketball
or
other sports. You know, what's your take? I know there's a lot of differences between, you know, some, you know, country clubs from the parks and just the way people in diverse communities cheer for their children. So what would be your thoughts on that?
I think that's a process, because tennis is not one of the sports we do those kind of cheering. So I think that's a process that we have to go through. But I think it can happen. And I understand what he's saying. He wants to see when he's out there, you know, and you know that he's really doing it, hitting that ball. He wants to hear it from those of us watching him.
Right. He wants that crowd reaction.
Oh, yeah.
And did you see that a lot, even in, you know, with junior tennis or during, you know, when your children were playing, like, were parents really out there, you know, cheering their children on, or were they sticking to the rules and kind of like just being tight-lipped?
Well, so you have some parents that were doing that, speaking to the rules and being tight, but then you have some parents who were just, you know, having their voices being said about tennis. And I had to, and let me tell you, I had to pull myself in a couple of times, because my youngest son played tennis also.
Okay.
But he was a good tennis player. He played for the ATA, but his passion was music. Mm. More so than tennis. And we had to decide, my husband and I had to decide which way we were going. So we know that his passion was music. So he, we ended up working with him to go toward music.
Okay.
And he ended up going to, he ended up really excelling in music now. He's, he plays tennis sometime, but he's really into music.
Nice. And it all goes hand in hand. I have, you know, a love of sports and music, right? I feel like there's definitely synergy.
Oh, yes.
You know, game operations and just the times you can play, you know, music and inside of a stadium or an arena. And so what is it about the ATA working? What are you and the ATA working on now? And what is it about working with the ATA that really excites you?
Well, what excites me about the ATA is that we have been that springboard, and I want us to really work on that. We've been that springboard for players to come to the ATA and evolve into going to the USTA. Okay. Some people might not know that Althea Gibson came through the ATA door prior to going to the USTA as a junior player. Arthur Ashe came through the ATA door prior to going through the USTA. The USTA former president Katrina Adams came through the ATA door prior to going to USTA. So there've been some James Blake came through the ATA door prior to going to USTA. So I want us to be that catalyst. And even Coco played the ATA when she was 7 years old.
Wow.
I want the ATA to be that, continue to be that catalyst where junior players can come. They learn how to play tennis. They have a good time because the ATA is all about family. It's a family affair. That's what we look at ourselves. And then be that springboard to go play a USTA tournament if they want to.
Yeah, you mentioned some greats, so people can't go wrong by that.
That's right.
And so, Roxanne, this episode is being released during Women's History Month. And one of the goals of the podcast is to interview people from communities we're celebrating during the DE&I Heritage Month. As a Black woman working in sports industry, what progress do you think needs to be done to bring more women to the table in high-powered positions?
I think that's happening. And I see the movement with the USTA, with the D&I, what they're doing. So I think that when we open our minds and we make that a goal, and I think that I see that as a goal to bring more women involved. As we continue to make that a goal and let it be on the table that this is something that we want to do. Because at the, I think the D&I community is really looking at, and that's why I applaud Marissa Grimes, Chief Officer for D&I for the USTA, what she has done and what she continued to do to look at bringing women, looking at women getting involved in sports and what do we need to do. And I think as long as we continue to do that, have that goal on the table, I think we will succeed.
I think you're right. You got something there. And so many amazing women are breaking glass ceilings. There's more CEOs. It's just a different time. So I'm happy that the USTA and Eastern, we're on the cutting edge of making change.
Oh, I am too. I am definitely too.
And so, Roxanne, I'm a mom. I was really excited about interviewing you after reading your story. And so I can just actually, you know, feel that I'm walking in your footsteps in the path that you've made for your children with my young children who play. What advice would you, you know, give to other moms like myself that are juggling career, being a partner? Oh, and just self-care for ourselves whenever we have time. Like, how did you really manage all of that?
I used to have a license plate, and I got to go back and get that license plate. And the license plate says all about me. So, and some people might take that another way, but let me tell you how I took it. You can't take care of anybody else, really, if you can't take care of yourself first. So you have to know how to come home sometime, put your feet up, have a cup of tea or whatever you need to have, a glass of wine or whatever, and relax sometime. Okay. Absolutely. And just let yourself wind down. Even though you might have children, you might have a busy day, I think sometimes we forget about ourselves. And once you, and let me just tell you something. There has been when I had young children and I knew that I had to get up and take them, my daughter was in dance. And like I said, my sons were in tennis and piano lessons. I knew that I had to do that, but I might get up on a Saturday morning after working all day and all during the week now, taking kids from one place to another. I might wake up on a Saturday morning and I might decide that I'm gonna stay in the bed for a couple hours. and stayed in the bed for a couple of hours. My kids will come and get in the bed with me. We'll sit around and I'll turn and I'll let them look at cartoons or whatever and just relax. Not feel as if I have to get up and clean the house or whatever. Once we feel we release all that and decide we're gonna let ourselves just chill.
Woo,
that's how you because there's nothing, life is too short, and there's nothing that's so important that you cannot say, I'm going to chill today. I'm going to relax for a couple hours. And then you're okay.
Oh, you are officially my hero because I am trying to figure that all out. I am a professional, you know, chauffeur, as they call it. I know you once wore that hat with your children. And there's just, you know, you're trying to juggle so much, you know, and we're here making history during Women's History Month.
Right.
And there's always a tennis tournament. There's always a practice.
Oh, yes.
There's always something going on. But being a mom and really pushing forward to lead our children down that path is just something I think is just ingrained with us. But I think I'm going to try to make tips.
Because, sometimes we realize we're running around so much, we don't realize that our children pick up what they see in us. Okay. Yes. And sometimes our children get stressed because they see the mom getting stressed. Okay. So, and we don't realize that because we're saying, I remember I went to a period where I would pull up from work and my one kid got to be at tennis practice, one kid got to be at dance, and I'm sitting in the car blowing my horn. Come on, get in the car. get in the car. We got to go. And then I found myself like, oh, hold on, man, that's too much. That's too much to run up, get off work a little early when you need to get off work, take your time, drive home, whatever, stuff like that. Make it calm for everyone to get in the car and to go somewhere. And then sometimes what I would do is I would, after tennis practice or after dance lessons or whatever, we live by a lake. So we would go to the lake afterwards.
Nice.
And I would sit, we would sit by the lake and we would talk about the day, what happened, what the day, and that brings a calmness to everyone.
It's a lot. I find myself taking phone calls on Zooms or, you know, from the car.
Right.
Up or dropping off or sitting outside waiting for tennis lessons to be over. And so it's a lot on, you know, moms that are definitely involved, mothers like yourself, who have their hands in the mix. You know, you're not just a hands-off approach. And so that being said, what are some of your hopes for the future of the ATA and for tennis as a whole?
Well, The ATA, we're celebrating 106 years, which I can't believe we've been around 106 years. So my hope for the ATA, we continue having hosting our nationals. Our national, we've hosted a national 105 years now. I think it's 105 years that we've had a nationals. And that we continue encouraging Black and brown kids to play tennis. And also that we continue to have a partnership with the USTA.
Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. And now, do you see young and up and coming tennis players that are part of the ATA that will springboard over to USTA tournaments, hopefully playing and then hopefully in the back office or the front office in the future?
Oh, yes, I see that. Yes, I definitely see that. And that's one of the things that we're working on too now. We're working on how do we get more, even in the HBCUs, how do we get that connection with the HBCUs that we have more than move toward the ATA? Because I'm also looking at leadership, I'm looking for leadership in the future of the ATA. And I want to bring on young people with different ideas to take over that leadership in the future.
Absolutely. And the young people will definitely make it happen.
Oh, yes.
And we need, especially with technology. And so,
oh, yes, definitely.
How can we support you? How can the USTA support the ATA's mission?
Well, I think that the USTA can support our mission by continuing to do to have a partnership with us. And what I'm finding now is that the ATA is really beginning to have more of a partnership with many of the sections. I am so honored to have the partnership with Eastern and the partnership that David Williams and I have become good partners and what we're doing in the Eastern section. And I would like to carry that partnership on to other sections. And I think that'll be a good thing to do.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It takes a journey and it takes amazing partners. So we'd like to hear more about the ATA Nationals. Do you have some fun stories, that things that you've seen or just some memorable moments you'd like to share?
I'm trying to think about that because you know that the ATA Nationals, in fact, this year, the ATA Nationals is going to be at the USTA National Tennis Center in Orlando, Florida, July the 24th through the 30th. And I tell everyone, we usually have 700, 800, 900 players.
Wow.
And that's players now. Then you got friends and you got families that come. So it's way over 1,000 for that whole week. And what I tell everyone, what's so fun about it is that the adults that come to play tennis, they come from all over the country and they come to play tennis. And after tennis, they come to go to the bar and talk smack. Okay. And that's what they look forward to. Okay. That's what we know, that that's the fun part of the tennis, of playing tennis. Okay. And they have a camaraderie where, you know, they've known each other for years, 20, 30 years, and can't wait to come back to play tennis. The juniors come to get points.
Right.
And very competitive. And their stories are that they have fun meeting with each other. And we have junior players. Every year we get junior players from about 20, 25 juniors come from Puerto Rico. We get junior players from Dominican Republic. We get players from Dominican Republic, from Africa. Okay. And that's overall, it's just like a fun event for that whole week.
Wow. That's just amazing. And now, what role do you think the ATA has in really catapulting those players? You said they come for points.
Right. The juniors come for points. And what we started doing, I'm also really proud of the partnership we have with Florida, with the USTA Florida section. Been very helpful to us. And we used to, in years past, for years, did not have an unsanctioned tournament. So now we have a sanctioned tournament. And that has really propelled us with more juniors coming to play. And I think that's been a really good thing for them, because now they can play, they get USTA points, they get UTR points. And so I think this has been really good for them.
Fantastic. And so, you know, how does, you know, a young person or their parent find out more information about the ATA?
They can go to our website. Our website is yourata.org. So then go to our website and find out more about tennis. And I'd like to mention something else too I want to share with you. The last few years we've gotten into a partnership with an organization in Florida. And it's a partnership that work with tennis players that have autism.
Okay.
And the last couple of years we've had that partnership where they have come to our tournament and play tennis in our tournament. So we would do a little small tennis where they play tennis with someone that a junior player that doesn't have autism with a junior player that has autism, and match them up together. And because we want to bring awareness about autism. So that's been a really good thing when we talk about, because sometimes I think that when we talk about diversity, people get too mixed up with diversity. Diversity is not a black or white issue. Okay, it covers more than that, of how when we look at diversity and equity and inclusion. So I think that's been very important for us to reach out. And I'm glad it, and I see that's also with what you're doing in the Eastern section. Just looking at diversity, it crosses so many boundaries that we need to look at.
Absolutely. And so how does the ATA build its support for its players? And any programs you'd like to highlight that you're working on? You mentioned the autism, but is there anything that you're working on with the USTA or just internally that you'd like to share?
Well, what we want to do is we want to have more mini tournaments throughout the country now. And a lot of times what I think we do sometimes, we get too wrapped up looking at the high performers players. So the ATA is really looking at now is looking at not putting everything into the high performance players, but also look at those regular tennis players that want to play tennis, because tennis teaches you a lot more. I think it teaches you when you go out on the tennis court, you're your own person, your own coach. You don't have a whole lot of people behind you.
Right.
Okay. Like you do with football, basketball to catch it. You got to be that. It teaches you how to be that person that when you out there by yourself, you know how to stand there and how to take it and really think about what you need, what your next move is going to be. So I think that's one of the things we want to work at is reaching out to those players and just do more in the community about those average tennis players that want to have fun and teach them there's more to life and what tennis brings to you. So that's one of the things. And then the other things that we're looking at too is that really raising funds for our junior program. Mm-hmm. We develop a junior program where we want to make sure that those kids in inner cities, those kids living in rural communities, if a kid needs a tennis racket, that the ATA can give a tennis racket. A couple years ago, we found out there was a grandmother raising her grandchild, and her grandson didn't have the funds to purchase sneakers for him. Mm. So the ATA ATA sent her money to purchase sneakers for him so he can go to USTA tournaments and play.
Oh, wow.
Okay. So those little, and they might have a situation where a parent can't afford tennis lessons. So the ATA can help with that. So we're trying to raise funds for that little pocket of money to help those families and those junior players that need us. And even coming to the Nationals, the one thing that I really, really appreciate is that the USTA Foundation has been very supportive of us in helping those players at the NJTLs that want to come play in the ATA Nationals to help with offsetting the cost for that.
That's fantastic. Yes, our foundation is doing such great work, and it's so phenomenal to hear that you're working collectively together.
Right.
And so I want to ask you just a little bit about mental health. A lot of mental health issues happen with tennis players, and also women and young people and people of color and people with, you know, disabilities or abilities, differently abled people. How do you see the ATA working with those families? You mentioned autism, but do you have any mental health programs that you are exploring?
And it's interesting you bringing that up. My ZEC director, Deanne Chavance, we were having a discussion about that because we're planning some webinars and really looking at mental health, because we realize these days that mental health has really, especially with the suicide rate among women and young people, has really increased. And I'm looking at what is it that we need to do about that. So that's one of the conversations that we're having now. And how do we reach out to junior players? How do we reach out to families? What is it that we need to do or not doing to look at this? And there's so many things that we can say about what's causing this. Mm-hmm. And one part of me is thinking that there's too much heaviness on people's heart, that maybe society's putting on people who they should be. I'm wondering whether social media is playing a role. Social media has a good role, and there's a challenging part to social media. Absolutely. And I think some people see what is happening on social media and think that that's where they should be at. And so there's all kinds of things. So I would love. I would love to have a roundtable discussion with professionals and with other sports people to talk about what's going on and how we can start looking at it and helping people with that challenge.
Absolutely. And thank you for sharing. And so, excuse me, David Williams and I, David Williams and I from USTA Eastern, we developed our USTA Tennis Titans brochure, and we reached out to you just to get your opinion on that. And we were missing some names, including your own. So how do you hope your legacy what do you see your legacy will be as a president of the ATA, and what are your hopes for the future?
Wow. I haven't thought about that one. I'm going into next year, 2024, my term ends as the president of ATA. I would have served 3 terms. And giving some thought to that, I hope that my legacy will be that I took the ATA in the period that I was here to new levels, to new heights, as far as with the organization. As far as a partnership with the USTA, which is a very important partnership, and partnership with other organizations. And I hope that at the end of the day, people will say that she did not have fear to go through that door. Now, one of the things I have to say, since I came up through the 70s, and I thought about one of my favorite singers, which some people might not know, James Brown. When we talk about something, one of the things that James Brown sang, and you might not even know that too. Your mother and father probably know James Brown.
My family's from Augusta. That's the only thing that comes out of Augusta is James Brown. And so, the Masters. So talk to me, Rossinger.
So James Brown had this one song said, and I really have remembered that, I don't want anybody to give me nothing. Open the door, I get it myself.
Absolutely.
So that is really what we should be saying. Open the door. And all we need is for you to open the door and we can get it.
That's right. Thank you so much, Roxanne. On behalf of the USTA Eastern family, we'd like to thank you for sharing your tennis story with us.
And thank you so much for taking the time to let me share that story.
We appreciate you and all that you're doing. Okay. Thank you. Tune in next time to hear our next tennis story, where we'll be talking women's health and tennis with a physician from New York Presbyterian. Thank you for tuning in.